G'day guys, welcome to this episode of Aussie English. Today I have a lecturer in linguistics from ANU University, College of the Arts and Social Sciences, and I hope I can say your name correctly. I haven't asked ahead of time, but we'll see if I can do it. Ksenia Gnevsheva.
Oh my God, this is so good. You're like the first person ever to say it so well, the first time. This is really good.
So how would you actually say that with a Russian accent properly?
It would be Ksenia Gnevsheva.
Far out. See, and that it's those consonant clusters that we just don't really have in English, right, that we have trouble with.
That's right. So I usually tell people that I have a silent K and a silent G at the beginning of my name. So,
they just skip it. They don't even worry about it. Far out. So I thought I harassed you to come on the podcast because I was seeing this. I had all these friends sending me this article or a few different articles recently about your study, and I'm sure you've sort of, you know, received quite a bit of attention now. But can you tell me about this study where it was that you found out migrants are learning or picking up Australian slang, non-English speaking migrants, or at least as their first language, they're picking up slang faster than English speaking migrants. So I guess my first question is, how on earth did you come up with this question? What made you decide to ask it and study it?
Yeah, I think a lot of my research, or research in general, is quite personal. So I think this is what happened to me. So I would consider myself a second language speaker of English. And I first moved to the US from Russia. So I lived in the US for about 3 years, and I acquired an American accent. So actually, when I first moved to the Southern Hemisphere, people asked me, "Oh, where are you from in the US?" So they could definitely tell that I had lived in the US.
Yeah.
But then I've lived here in the Southern Hemisphere, first in New Zealand and then in Australia for, oh my God, about 7 years now. And you can hear that my American accent is absolutely gone.
Yeah, I can't hear it at all. I was going to say, I haven't noticed any of it.
Yeah. So I used to say car and park and things like that. And now I say car and park.
Did you have to actively try and lose that R pronunciation when you came down to the Southern Hemisphere? Was that a trial? Did you actually have to spend quite a bit of time in the mirror practicing that, not saying the R's?
You know what's funny is that it happened sort of, below my level of consciousness. Actually, that's not true. I was consciously trying to retain it.
Oh,
I was
really?
Consciously trying to retain my R because I had lived in the US for a longer time at that point. I felt like I had a stronger connection with the US English. So I wanted to continue speaking with an American accent. But then my words started changing and my pronunciation started changing, and I tried to resist it. But no, within the first 2 years, my R's were gone and my vowels started changing, and I started using, New Zealand and then Australian words.
No kidding. Well, we'll get to the study later on, I guess, because I've got a few questions here. Is that something that most of the people that I've ever met who lose their accents, they tend to be very young. So is that something that adults can do easily, or is your case a pretty rare case where you had one accent in a language that you spoke fluently and then it switched later on without you even trying actively? Because I've only ever heard of, for instance, I had some friends go to America when I was in high school, and they came back after a year with a really thick American accent, and it took them a good 6 months to lose it.
So research shows that there are a number of different factors that affect how well people can pick up a new accent, or how adaptable they are in terms of accent or language in general. And age is definitely one of the strongest predictors. So the younger you are when you move to a new dialect area or a new language area, a new country, the more likely you will be to acquire the variety spoken there. But there are other things as well. So even if you take people of the same age and move them from one country to another, there will be different outcomes.
Oh, really?
So motivation is one of them.
Yeah.
So the more motivated you are to speak with a native-like accent, for lack of a better word, the more exposure you have to the language or the dialect, your social network. So the more friends you have in the new dialect or language, the more likely you are to acquire it.
So is that tied in then with contact with your L1, your first language too, so that if you do kind of come to a country and then completely sever all ties with your, you know, L1, you're much more likely to pick up the L2 to a higher level with a much more diminished accent than if you were, say, living with Australians in Russia and only hanging out with Australians and only watching Australian TV?
These can be related, but it's not a one-to-one correlation, so you can't say that. Or if you sever all ties, then it's good. One thing that we recommend as researchers to children. So for example, quite often, parents who do not speak English as their first language will try to speak English to their children in the hope that the children will acquire a better English. But actually we have found that it's not so good for the children's development, linguistic development. It is actually, we find that it is actually better for them to develop good proficiency in one language and then build on that proficiency in English. It sounds counterintuitive, but actually it's interesting. The research shows that quite often development in both languages goes hand in hand.
So once they're sort of picking up one and they get exposed to another one later on, they're more likely to pick it up. Because I'm at that point now, and we have a few friends where, say, one set of friends stands out in particular because the father's Hungarian, she's Brazilian, and the kids obviously half of half, but they've grown up in Switzerland and then come to Australia. And so it's very weird because he speaks Hungarian to them, the mum speaks Brazilian Portuguese to them, and they speak English to each other. And if I speak to them, I speak Portuguese because my wife's Brazilian. If I speak to them in Portuguese, quite often it takes a while for them to switch over from English because they know that I'm Australian, so they will just hit me with that. So is it... We're about to have a child as well, and for selfish reasons.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Would you suggest sticking with just one language, whether it's English or Portuguese for the beginning, when you're raising that baby and not trying to bombard them with two at once, or they won't have a problem with either?
I think most people suggest doing both languages at the same time. And it ties in, it doesn't only tie in with simply linguistic development, but also motivation, because quite often when children realize that they can get away with speaking only one language, English, the majority language in this case, they will sort of resist speaking the other home language, Portuguese, yep. Right?
Well, we were thinking, let's just teach them Portuguese at home and my family and the rest of Australia can teach the kid English, but we'll just make sure that the home is Portuguese only for my sort of selfish reasons as well, because I want to get proficient or more and more proficient in it, right? So...
Yeah, I think I can't tell you what to do here, right? There are many things to consider, and you'll have to make the choice yourself. But there are many things to consider, and there are also emotional things, emotional connections, right? Will you be happy connecting with your child emotionally in a language that is foreign to you? I think you could try both ways and see how it goes. Every family is different, and every child is different from another child. So you can see how it goes and play it by ear.
Was it like that for you? Did you grow up speaking English? Because you would have to be one of the Russians that I've met with a very, very near native, almost perfect accent. And most Russians, they have that stereotype, right, of having a very thick accent because the sounds in Russian are so different. Did you grow up speaking it from a very young age, or did you learn it at a later age or through school or...
So I speak to my parents in Russian, and Russian was the only language that I grew up speaking. I first learned it as a foreign language in school, but then I moved to the U.S. at a youngish age. I moved to the U.S. at the age of 15. So I think I was sort of at that age where you can still, where the age is on your side.
Yeah. So to speak. So that brain plasticity is still there and going to help you.
It was still there. Yeah, definitely. And I think I was, it's not just that. I think I'm also quite motivated. And this is why my accent changes quite a bit when I move from country to country. I think, I don't know, maybe I want to fit in and make new friends.
Yeah, I was always wondering that because I find that my accent even varies in Australia depending on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to, you know, the quote-unquote bogan in Australia, I'm not going to talk as politely and as articulately as normal because I don't want to stick out. I kind of want to be like, okay, I'm one of you. And then when I talk with foreigners, I try not to use, you know, and a lot of slang because I want them to understand me. So does it come from a place when people do that of not wanting to stand out, or is it more that they want to be part of that group and they're kind of like, I just want to be able to speak and not have to, you know, have to answer as many questions about what I've said, or could you say that again, you know, everything like that? Is that part of the reason we do that?
Yeah, I think there are several reasons to that. Communication, simply more efficient communication is one of them. But of course, the social aspect of it is very important as well. So when we're talking to somebody, we want to create a community. We want to be more similar to them. So this is shown in gestures as well. So you will see that when people are talking to each other, they will often inadvertently copy each other's gestures. Yeah. And that applies to language as well.
Oh, so that's that kind of like if one of you starts doing this in a conversation, right, the other person will do this. And
wow. Absolutely, yeah.
So what got you so interested in linguistics to begin with? Was it learning English when you came to America, or was it, you know, in you from a much younger age that you had an interest in languages and linguistics?
I think I've always liked languages. And then when I moved to the US, I became very much interested in how people learn languages. So the pedagogy of it, but also how people change their accent. And this is why my research now is on accents. And I mostly work with bilingual participants, bilingual from a young age or second language speakers, or usually English or other languages as well.
Oh, brilliant. And so tell us about this study then. How did you come up with the idea for this study? Sorry for sort of doing a whole detour there, but...
Yeah. So like I said, I first began by thinking about my own experience and how my accent and my language changed from moving from Russia to the US, and then from the US to New Zealand, and then to Australia. And then I looked at some of my native English speaking friends, and there I thought that their accent was not changing as much if they were moving from the US to Australia.
Yeah.
You will meet some Americans here who, you know, they've lived here for 30 years and they still speak very American.
Some of them have been here longer than I've been alive, and I've met them and I'll be like, man, you've had plenty of time to learn the Aussie accent and slang and you're still asking me what an Esky is. Come on.
That's right. So I wondered, what is it? What happens? How are second language speakers different from first language speakers of a language? And it could go both ways, right? You could say, oh, perhaps second language speakers are more adaptable because it is their second language, or it could go the other way. Possibly they're less adaptable because it is their second language, so they're sort of stuck in one gear and that's it. And when I looked at, when I tried to find any previous research on this matter, I couldn't find anything. There were a couple of studies looking at it, but it was not exactly what I was looking for, and there have been none in Australia before. So I decided, why not do it?
And so, how did you test this question?
Yeah, so what we did is we recruited for. I should acknowledge my co-authors.
Yeah, do it, of course.
This research was conducted together with my colleagues at Macquarie University, Anita Sakai, and Sandra Janssen at University of Paderborn in Germany.
Oh, wow.
So we're quite an international team. Yeah. So we recruited four groups of participants. We had native speakers of Australian English, so people born and bred in Australia, that's right, you repeat. We also had native speakers of American English who moved from the US to Australia and have lived in Australia between 1 and 10 years.
Yep.
And then we had two groups of Russian speakers, native Russian speakers, second language speakers of English. One group moved from Russia to Australia. So Australian English was the first English variety that they acquired in a real life setting.
Yeah.
And then we had a second group of Russians who moved from Russia to the US and then to Australia. So American English was their first English variety, and then Australian English was their second English variety. And we were wondering how these four groups would compare to each other. So one of the experiments that we had them do was to look at pictures of everyday objects. And all they had to do is say what it is.
Yeah.
And the objects that we chose were things that have different names or different words in American English and Australian English. So esky is one example, right? So esky is the word for icebox or cooler.
Yeah.
So cooler is the word that you would use in American English. And there are many words like that.
Or like G-string, did you show them that?
We showed them flip-flops, and they could call them flip-flops or thongs, right?
Yep.
Capsicum versus bell pepper.
Of course.
Jug versus pitcher.
It's so funny, too, plate. Because so many of those are like esky, it's one of those things where it's almost like, okay, I know that's a slang term, but I don't know how else I would call it. So there's quite a few of those words, but then there are some where you don't even realize, like thongs, you don't even think, oh, that's a slang term. You just think that they're just thongs.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't call them. I would just say words. I wouldn't call them slang exactly because they are words in Australian English. I don't think they have the. I think in Australian English, I would consider them as normal words. Like capsicum is.
Yeah, exactly right. And there's a few. There's like, is it aubergine and eggplant as well? Eggplant,
that's right. Yeah. So we had about 50 pictures of these items, of these words, objects, and we had people name them. And then all we had to do is calculate what proportion of these words they would use an Australian word for and what proportion of these words they would use an American word for. And the American English speaker or the Australian English speakers were sort of our baseline. This is the people that we compare everybody. These people grew up here. They should be using the Australian word all the time.
You'd be worried if that wasn't the case.
Well, everything is relative, right? So we found that they use this Australian, what we call traditionally Australian words, 80% of the time.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, Australians would use, they would say elevator for lift, or they would say pepper for capsicum. So every once in a while, they would use.
Damn American TV.
And then the Americans used Australian words at about 20% of the time. So there's a clear difference here, 80% to 20%. Now, the native Russian speakers who moved from Russia to Australia without going to the US first were not different from the Australians.
That's so cool.
Yes. So they use Australian words as often as native speakers of Australian English. And then, of course, it's interesting to see what happens to the second language speakers who go from one country to another because they have had exposure to American English. So you would expect them to use American English words as often as Americans. And no, they used Australian words at about 50% of the time. So they were right in between the Americans and Australians. So that tells us that they were more adaptable. So both the second language group that moved from Russia to Australia used Australian words more than the American group, in fact, as often as the Australian group. And the second group that moved from Australia to the from Russia to the US to Australia, they were not quite there yet, but maybe if we were to test them again in 10 years' time, maybe they would be there.
Is that a plan for a future study?
That would be really cool if we could re-recruit these participants, if we could find these participants again and they would agree to participate.
And so what are the limitations with extrapolating out from that? Because obviously you've used just Russians and Americans and English speakers, but do you think that this is going to be a pattern you see more broadly across all different languages, you know, and people in these equivalent situations, whether or not it's English and Russian?
I think... In general, this could be, I think this could be generalized to other second language groups. Something to keep in mind is the prior exposure to the English language before moving to Australia or the US. So all of the Russians had studied English before moving to an English speaking country. Actually, in most of the countries of the world, it is very difficult to find somebody who would have not had any exposure to English language, right?
So,
this plays a role as well. Most of the Russians would have had exposure to both British English and American English. So, but the relative exposure to the two varieties may affect the results of that. So if you go to South Korea, where American English is much more dominant, maybe you expect that people would prefer to use American English words more.
Yeah, because one of those peculiar sort of situations is where every time I talk with people from, I think it's either Singapore and or the Philippines, they always have such a strong American accent. And I think they're obviously taught American English to like a really strong, strong, strong degree. It's really emphasized there. But even after a few years here, they still have a very strong American accent. So the other question I was going to ask is, what is it with the Americans that have moved here, obviously? What do you think it is that's making them hold on to those old, those American words instead of using the Australian ones? Is it just habit and having developed and, you know, spent all that time doing it or...
So there could be several explanations for that, right? One is what we call a cognitive explanation, and this is exactly what you just said. It is habit, right? So if you think about the native American English speakers, they used American English words for 30 years of their life, and then they moved to Australia, and then they live here for 1 or 2 years. You wouldn't really expect them to switch to Australian English words overnight, right? Because just the relative exposure is different.
And Americans are pretty stubborn.
in comparison to second language speakers of English, maybe they've lived in the US for 5 years and then they moved to Australia and they live here for 5 years. So this is much more comparable. So they would be much more willing to switch to new words, right? Yeah. And the second explanation that we offer is a social explanation. For a native speaker of American English, using Australian words may almost be, you feel like a traitor.
And you wonder too, are there Australians keeping them in check? Where if you hear an American say, "G'day, mate," you'll be like, "Dude, are you taking the piss? Like, are you just, you know, making fun of me or something?"
That's right. And people may take it differently, right? And quite often, native speakers do not expect other native speakers from other countries to change as drastically in terms of their accent or the words they choose as they would with second language speakers of English. For some reason, we expect second language speakers of English to acquire this native-like accent straight away.
Yeah, that's peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, for second language speakers of English, there is no such emotional connection to these words or that accent. So they may be more adaptable because of that.
Do you think too that if you were to test I don't know how you would do it, the qualitative accents of the Americans, and if the closer that accent had gotten, or the more reduced it had become closer to English, or Australian English, do you think that would track with how much slang they're using in Australia too? So, like, the more slang these expats from other English-speaking countries are using in Australia, the weaker their foreign accent would be, so that it does almost show that they would be, you know, much more engaged in trying to, lose that part of their life and become Australian?
So you mean the different levels of language, right? So vocabulary and accent at the same time.
Yeah, do you think they would go together?
I suspect that they would. But again, it could go either way. Yeah. You could say, yes, perhaps both of them would progress at the same time. Or perhaps we could find that maybe one level is more adaptable than another. Usually, I think I would expect vocabulary to be more adaptable than accent, but it is an empirical question, and we are planning to test that because we did collect some audio recordings from our participants as well. We have not analyzed them yet, so I'm not ready to share those results. But
it's in the works.
Watch this space.
So, Annette, what would you say to the people listening to the podcast, obviously, who are learning Australian English? What sort of advice would you give them with regards to learning the accent as well as the slang? Is it something that you would encourage or even suggest, at least accent-wise, that it is an obtainable, like, goal that they should aim for? Or is it something where it's like, it's just not that important, don't worry about it?
I think in today's globalized world, when you have exposure to all of these different accents, I think being comprehensible, comprehensibility and intelligibility, I'd say, are more important. And people move from country to country all the time, and people communicate with people from different countries as well. So perhaps one specific accent may not be as important. Striving for this, you know, native-like ideal may not be as important, especially because it is quite difficult to attain for many adult second language learners. So I would say aiming for being comprehensible and intelligible is the most important thing.
And is it the same thing then with slang? Because I get quite a few students asking me, should I learn Australian slang? And I guess it's always one of those things where I have to say, well, what do you mean when you say Australian slang? You know, because there are plenty of expressions that are sort of stereotypes, and that they put, I have a book here somewhere with like 900 Australian slang terms, and you read some of them and you're like, no one has ever said this. No one. But then there are those other ones like Esky and Barbie and Snag that people call slang and think are very useful. So what would you say if someone came to you and said, I'm moving to this country and I want to learn the slang? Would you recommend that they sort of dive in and try and do that, or it's just going to happen passively?
I think when people move to another country, it really happens very organically when they find new friends and they will learn all of these useful words, like you were saying, right? Instead of learning all of these words from a book, and then you find out that actually nobody uses those words. But of course, I cannot say, oh, don't learn new words. It's good to expand your vocabulary. But I would say don't stress out about it too much, because some things will happen naturally when you move to that country.
And for the last question before we finish up, have you noticed at all that I don't know how to put it, but like I find myself using American words quite often, and I feel like it's because of our exposure to Hollywood and American TV shows. It's just all pervasive these days throughout the globe, you know, but you don't hear Americans saying g'day and, you know, using or English terms, even with Game of Thrones. So what do you think is going on there with English as it's evolving in the future? Do you think that it's going to become one sort of cohesive language eventually because of our interconnectedness and our obsession with American TV shows and movies? Or do you think it will always remain really distinct despite that connectedness now?
Well, it could go either way, right? You would say that on the one hand, it's a globalized world, right? We have exposure to the American variety more and more. At the same time, people will always want to stand out and be different and show that they belong somewhere else. So I don't think that all the different varieties will disappear all of a sudden. I think people will always want to be different and to express their belonging to some group in some way.
Is that why in, say, the UK, those differences are so distinct despite being over such small distances, right, between these different dialects, whereas you come to somewhere like Australia and you don't really see that as much? Is that because those groups over there are much older and they're much more trying to show, okay, we belong to this group, they belong to that group?
That's right. In the UK, it's the historical depth, really, the time depth, because these people lived in those areas for a long time. So they developed a different way of speaking, whereas Australia and the US as well and New Zealand are new Englishes. So they're much more homogeneous, but of course there are differences here as well.
Oh, brilliant. Well, Dr. Ksenia, and let's see if I can get the surname right, Gnevsheva. Gnevsheva. Yes, I nailed it. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
You can go to my website. I have a website. It's Gnevsheva, G-N-E-V-S-H-E-V-A .com. I post there about my research. You will find all of my papers there and some of the links to media releases and things like that. And, of course, you can just Google me and find me on my university webpage at ANU.
Which is what I did. Anyway, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. Thank you for having me.